sped-in system, shedding velocity and swinging into Mercury's gravity well, the planet swelled from a greenish pinpoint to an emerald disk the size of a thumbnail. Though Anakin did not recall the world having a moon, the pearly fleck hanging beside it was too bright to be a background star and too steady to be an optical illusion. He turned to the sensor station, where Lobaka sat with his emergency vac suit pulled over his jumpsuit, his head buried in a cognition hood and his huge hands squeezed into a pair of control gloves. "Loey, anything?" Anakin asked. The Wookiee groaned a reply, which MTD, hovering alongside, translated as, "Master Lobaka feels it is indeed a Yuuzhan Vong world ship." Lobaka grunted and yowled a few more times, and the translation droid added, "There are several corvette analogs in orbit around it, though the diameter is quite large for a world ship, approximately 120 kilometers. That was as large as the first Death Star. Anakin whistled softly to himself, then reached out toward the distant fleck with the Force. Not one to rule out the possibility of coincidence, he was nevertheless suspicious enough of it to inspect it carefully. He felt an all-too-familiar stirring, the feral agitation of a Voxen, but also something else, another presence, full of terror and pain and surprise. A clear, sharp presence, not hazy. Jedi, not Yuuzhan Vong. Anakin did not realize he had gasped until a hand took his arm and Alima asked what was wrong. Tahiri clasped his arm. "Anakin? There are Jedi there," he said, "with the Voxen." "Well, that puts Plan A right out the lock," Genner said. Plan A called for them to sneak as close as possible to the cloning facility and destroy it with a beradium-packed missile, then use the resulting confusion to confirm the Queen's destruction and escape. "We'll have to try something else." Lobaka moaned a warning from the sensor console, informing Anakin that a trio of Yuuzhan Vong corvettes had just appeared from the far side of Merkur and were lining up for approach behind the exquisite death. Jaina rolled them to starboard and angled into line behind a string of dark specks drifting across the face of the world ship, now so large that it completely filled the dome. A complex of cone-shaped Grashawl peaks appeared on the horizon, protruding up through the outer shell, a little to the starboard of the long line of vessels they were following. Even with the naked eye, Anakin could see that the buildings emerged from the surface close to the city-sized square of a huge black pit. "Max mag that, Ulaha," he said. "What's it like?" Ulaha turned her holocam on the complex and increased the magnification. "It appears to be some kind of spaceport," she wheezed. Though the Bith was much improved after her healing trance, she remained weak and colorless. "There is a large pit, surrounded by many entrances, with what look to be loading facilities." "Abandoned?" "Empty," Ulaha corrected. "No vessels in sight, but the landing pads are stacked with cargo pods and cages." Anakin reached out to the facility with the Force. He no longer felt the pained presence he had noticed before, but the hungry stirring of Voxen was still powerful. The tingle in the back of his neck became a nettling, and noting that their current approach would keep them well away from the complex, he suddenly understood why the world ship had not yet hailed them. "They're trying to lead us into a trap. Jaina, turn toward that complex now." Anakin activated the comlink. "Everybody, secure your vac suits. We're in for a rough ride." Ganner's voice came over the comlink.
"What now, Plan D?"
"Sort of." Anakin looked toward the cloning compound and saw a dozen Yorick coral flecks swarming over the buildings. They were not coming out to attack, so it seemed apparent they were conserving their energies and would not open fire until the exquisite death reached point-blank range. Given the likelihood of a miss hitting the corvette analogs streaking in behind the death, it seemed a wise strategy. "Here's what I want." Anakin had barely described his plan before Ulaha held out her datapad. "What's that?" "I must be the one to stay with the ship," she said. Anakin felt his sister's alarm as acutely as his own. "No offense, Ulaha," Jaina said, "but you're hardly up to something like this." "Perhaps not, But I am a pilot, and the Exquisite Death is hardly a starfighter. Ulaha pressed the data pad into Anakin's hand. As stated, your plan has a 21% success probability, with the casualty projection in excess of 90%. Without me to burden you on the ground, your success probability rises to almost 50%. That high? Anakin did not even want to hear the casualty projections. Okay, but just drop 2-1S's shuttle and go. The Bith blinked at him. It's okay, Anakin. This is the right thing. She turned away and reached for the cognition hood. Now hurry. Every minute of delay reduces the mission's success probability by 0.2%. Feeling a little lonely and hollow inside, Anakin rushed down the corridor into the first hold, where the Jedi were already packing themselves and their equipment into 5 Yuuzhan Vong cargo pods. Zek motioned Anakin into a pod with Raynar, Ero, and Tahiri.
They are coming out to meet us, but they do not fire,
Ulaha calmed.
Now they are spreading out, and arrest tentacles are extending from the noses of some ships.
The Exquisite Death swung sharply to port, then lurched back onto course, dipped sharply, and began to jink like a fighter. You must start the drop, Ulaha calmed. The ship began to shudder.
They are shooting tentacles at us. Projected drop zone 2 kilometers from spaceport at bearing 122.
2-1S reported from the shuttle.
Surprise likelihood high.
Anakin gave the go order, and Ulaha put the Exquisite Death into a coral crackling climb. At the end of the long line of cargo pods, 2-4S used his blaster cannon to open a makeshift bomb bay, and the hold decompressed with a tremendous roaring. Anakin's pod began to slide across the floor toward the breach.
Pod 2 away,
2-4S reported.
Pod 3.
Anakin did not hear the next report, for a tremendous growling reverberated through their pod as it scraped over the edge of the hole and fell free. His stomach grew queasy with weightlessness, and all 5 of them began to float. Anakin remained silent through the descent, wishing that he could see the surface or feel the non-existent atmosphere buffeting them or anything. After a few more seconds, he decided that they had to be almost down and began to slow their descent still further. And then the bone-jarring shock of impact slammed everyone to the floor. They went weightless as the capsule bounced, then came down on their side and rolled more times than Anakin could count before coming to a rest in a jumbled tangle. Anakin used the Force to move the others off him, then ignited his lightsaber and hacked through the Blorash jelly seam. He had barely opened a fist-sized hole before Zek and the others activated the delay on 4 grenades and used the Force to push them up through the crack. 2 seconds later, a roiling fireball erupted 50 meters overhead. Hoping the explosion would look realistic enough from a distance, Anakin finished opening the pod and stepped out into a dusty basin of brown, dead Yorick coral. A pair of heavy steps came up beside Anakin. Then Ganner said over the vac suit comnet,
"Good to go, Anakin. We have the bearings to the spaceport, and 2-4S's sensors show no sign they realize we're here."
Though no one said as much, all of their thoughts were on Ulaha, alone in the Exquisite Death, with 5 Corvette analogs and a host of skiffs on their tail. The strike team resumed its march. Ulaha's presence continued to fade, then finally vanished altogether. In the dim planet glow shining down from Merkur's emerald face, the flattened Senelac shafts looked more like ice spikes than any security system Anakin had ever seen. The rigid stalks were only knee-high and no thicker than a finger, but as Jovan Drak's invisible force wave pushed a safe furrow through the field, their blunt blue caps released a meter-long strand of thorns. The barbed cord would flail around in the vacuum for a couple of seconds, presumably entwining and capturing, if not killing, whatever had disturbed it. Had Alima not warned them about the trap, the strike team would have entered the security field completely unprepared. The last of the Senelaks fell to Jovan's force wave, and they found themselves at the edge of the spaceport. Basically, a huge pit 30 meters deep and a kilometer across, it was surrounded by a cavernous colonnade sealed behind a transparent membrane and accessed by a ring of airlocked valveways. Perhaps 5 kilometers beyond the landing pit rose the hive-shaped Grashal peaks they had seen from space. Anakin did not need to stretch out with the Force to know that was where the Voxen were kept. He could feel their hunger clearly, coming straight from that direction. The Jedi prisoner was another matter. He could not sense him, or her, or them, at all, even when he exerted himself. The outer valve was just closing when 2-4S reported,
"Incoming vessel, enemy, frigate analog."
The news sent a prickle of danger sense down Anakin's spine. Anakin backed away from the edge and stood. When he turned to order the holoshrouds activated, he found himself facing a long line of what looked like Yuuzhan Vong. "I suppose you know the plan too?" Anakin asked.
"Straight to the Asalamiri house."
Bella, or was it Krazov, answered.
"Then back to steal the rescue shuttle,"
Ganner finished.
"We've got it, Jedi. 2-4S and I will cover the descent."
Anakin activated his own holoshroud and stepped over the edge, dropping alongside the wall and using the Force to cushion his landing. When he did not feel any surge of Yuuzhan Vong alarm through the lambent crystal, he turned to find himself standing before a rancor-sized airlock, a warren of murky tunnels and murkier doorways barely visible through its translucent door valves. Alima, Tizar, and the others began to arrive beside him. Knowing the Twi'lek to be the most experienced at infiltrating enemy lines, he assigned her to lead the way through the airlock while he kept an eye on the rest of the spaceport. The landing pit appeared even larger from the floor than from above. In the murky green light, only the rescue vessel, sitting pinched in its biotic berthing bay, was distinct and easy to see. Anakin took the lead and began to hurry along the colonnade at the fastest pace he could without drawing too much attention. The power packs in their holoshrouds would last only 2 minutes before growing unreliable and needing to be changed. They reached the dark archway leading into the Asalamiri Warren. Anakin knew instantly they were in the right place, for the air stank of unwashed bodies, old blood, and even fouler things. A pair of Yuuzhan Vong warriors stood behind a Yorick coral lobby counter, adroitly plaiting a living cord into a braided whip and somehow ignoring the anguished screams rolling up the corridor. As Anakin approached, both warriors stopped work and crossed their arms over their chest.
"Ramaga Korlat, Miganyam?"
the taller one asked. Anakin walked straight to the gateway.
"Ramaga Korlat?"
the tallest guard asked again, now pulling his amphistaff off his waist and stepping to block Anakin's way. Anakin's answer was sharp, if not quite angry.
"Kaneabar!"
The Yuuzhan Vong's saggy eyes looked more confused than angry, but he lowered his amphistaff toward Anakin's chest.
"Yaga?"
Anakin pointed his lightsaber and thumbed the activation switch. Crimson blade shot through the guard's throat and came out through his neck, narrowly missing the warrior behind him. This second Yuuzhan Vong hurled himself backward and opened his mouth to shout the alarm, but was interrupted by the snap hiss of Alima's silver lightsaber slicing through his head. Anakin switched off his holoshroud and made assignments, sending Jason, Ganner, and 2-4S to watch the entrance, and Jaina, Raynar, and Errol to dispose of the remaining Asalamiri. Everyone else, he led down the corridor toward the torture sounds. When he reached the doorway and peered around the corner, he found himself staring at a Yuuzhan Vong's Vonduan crab-armored chest. The warrior gave a startled cry and started to bring his amphistaff around, but Anakin was already slashing his lightsaber across the Yuuzhan Vong's throat. He thrust-kicked the collapsing body back into the chamber, then heard the telltale drone of thud bugs coming his way and dived to the floor. He rolled over his shoulder, trying to scan the chamber as he moved. There was an Asalamiri tree in one corner, and two figures spread-eagle against the rear wall, and two more figures moving on his right. He came up with his lightsaber in a high guard, then dropped flat as Tizar's mini-cannon bolts began bumping past his head. Only one Yuuzhan Vong remained, smaller than most and thinner, with a spectral female face and a variety of hooked and serrated talons protruding from her eight fingers, wrists, and even elbows. A shaper. Anakin stood and started toward her, but a web of shimmering energy lines crackled into existence around her body before he had taken two steps. He thought it was a personal shield of some kind, until her eyes widened and she spat something angry. Anakin focused his thoughts on the web and felt the familiar energies of the Force, but colder and tainted with darkness. He glanced toward the back wall, where the two prisoners still hung spread-eagle, each bleeding from a profusion of wounds. One, a powerfully built woman with dark hair and darker eyes, was glaring at the Shaper, quietly mouthing words Anakin did not understand. The Yuuzhan Vong tried to pluck a strand of the Force energy from her body and succeeded only in severing three fingers. The dark woman smiled, and the web began to shrink, slowly cutting into the Shaper's flesh. Anakin was overcome by a deep sense of wrongness, of hatred and anger and evil. This woman was acting not out of wartime necessity, but out of bloodlust and vengeance. He started toward her. No, this is wrong. She ignored him. The Yuuzhan Vong screamed in anguish. Blood began to patter on the floor, and something larger as well. Anakin glanced back to see small cubes of flesh dropping off the body of the female Shaper. Stop! Anakin raised the butt of his lightsaber and stepped forward to enforce his command, but the Yuuzhan Vong's scream ended abruptly in a wettish plopping sound. When he glanced back, he found her body heaped on the floor in diced sections. The smell was as horrible as the sight, and he had to fight not to vomit. That was when Jason's voice came over his earpiece.
That frigate's sending down a shuttle, little brother.
Okay, Anakin gasped. Keep me posted. There was a pause, then Jason asked,
Is something wrong?
We're fine, Anakin said. Just a surprise. I'll tell you later. An acknowledging click came over the comlink. Then Anakin turned to find Alima at the back wall, already freeing the dark woman from the Blorash jelly holding her in place. A fascinating technique, the Twi'lek was cooing. Do you think I could learn it? No, you couldn't, Anakin said. That attack was cruel, unnecessarily so. Alima spun on him, her pale Twi'lek eyes as cold and hard as a Hothan lake. You may lecture me about cruel when a Voxen has burned the flesh from your sister's face. She turned back to the dark woman, who was now free of the wall. Perhaps I want to be cruel. The woman gave her an encouraging smile. There is nothing wrong with vengeance. It is a noble emotion, a powerful one. Spoken like a true knight sister, Zek said, stepping into the chamber. He glanced from the dark woman to the young man, who was still hanging on the wall behind her. Hello, Welk. Welk, a blonde-haired human a year or two older than Anakin, narrowed his eyes at Zek. Hello, traitor. You two know each other? Anakin asked. Zek nodded. From the Shadow Academy. Welk here was Tamith Kai's best student. After Vilas died, of course. After you killed him, Welk corrected, glaring at Zek. And Zek was the darkest knight, our leader until he betrayed the Second Imperium at Yavin 4. Anakin frowned at this. Though he had been too young to participate in the defense of the Jedi Academy when Tamith Kai's Dark Jedi attacked, many of the Jedi Knights on his strike team, including both of his siblings, Lobaka, Tenel Ka, and Raynar, had fought valiantly in the battle. They would not be happy to learn that they had just risked their lives to save one of the attackers. Tizar, who had never even been to Yavin 4, was the first to object. We risked our lives to save Dark Jedi? The Barabel trained his mini-cannon on the pair. Blaster bolts! Check that, Tizar. Anakin pushed the mini-cannon down, then turned to the Dark Woman. Are there any Jedi?
We are Jedi, she replied.
Though she was oozing blood from 100 different wounds, the pain seemed to trouble the woman no more than it would a Yuuzhan Vong. But in answer to your question, not alive. We were the ones you sensed when you entered the system. All the same, there's no harm in looking around. Anakin nodded to Teezar and his hatchmates. Be careful.
Do as you wish, young Solo,
the woman smiled.
But there is no need to doubt us. We will be happy to help destroy the Voxen. How do you know? You are certainly not here to rescue us.
Leaving Welk pinned on the wall behind her, she started for the door.
My name, by the way, is Lomi Plo. Perhaps I should start by telling you what we know of this place.
Anakin raised his brow. You aren't holding that to bargain? What makes you think we won't leave you? Lomi regarded him coldly.
And who would be the Dark One then, Anakin?
Anakin was still trying to figure out how she knew his identity when his earpiece activated again.
We've got trouble, little brother.
This time it was Ganner on the other end.
That shuttle? You won't believe who's on it. I don't,
Jason added.
It looks like Noma Nor.
Gaunt and thin-lipped, with a much broken nose, Noma Nor was the most recognizable Yuuzhan Vong in the galaxy, at least to a Jedi Knight. The feathery creature hopping along beside him was another matter. Standing a little over waist-high on reverse-jointed knees, it had willowy ears, corkscrew antennae, and delicate whiskers fringing a broad simian mouth. Jason had never seen a creature quite like this one, and yet he had the uncanny feeling he should know it. Halfway to its destination, the thing stopped and turned its head in his direction. Though it was gazing through two layers of window membrane and across 100 meters of landing pit, it looked straight at him. It let its gaze linger long enough to send a cold shiver down his spine, then smiled slyly and fluttered forward to rejoin Noma Nor. Beside Jason, Ganner whispered, "It couldn't have seen us." Despite his assertion, he retreated deeper into the shadows. It glanced over by chance.
"It felt us," Jason said, lowering the electrobinoculars. "More than that, it felt our apprehension."
He did not add that the creature had done so through the Force. The shock radiating from Ganner suggested he had already reached the same conclusion.
"What's wrong with you two?"
Jaina asked, joining them in the archway.
"You feel like you've been hearing the Emperor's voice. Don't tell me you're afraid of a few Yuuzhan Vong."
"There are more than a few." Jason passed the electrobinoculars to his sister. "But it's Nomanor's pet that bothers me. I think it touched me with the Force." Jaina studied the little creature.
"You're sure?"
"Not sure," Jason clarified, "but convinced."
"Me too," Ganner agreed. "That smile."
Jaina frowned in thought.
"Does feathers there remind you of anybody?"
"I keep thinking it should," Jason said, "but I've never seen anything like it."
"Sorry, I forget that New Republic intelligence isn't sharing with Uncle Luke these days," Jaina said. "We've seen some interesting holograms in Rogue Squadron. That's Vergere."
"Vergere?" Jason gasped. Vergere had been involved in one of the Yuuzhan Vong's first efforts to assassinate the Jedi, but she had also been the one who had given their father the healing tears that had first put Mara's illness into remission. To this day, there remained disagreement over whether Vergere was a friend or foe of the Jedi, a mere pet of the assassin, or an agent in her own right.
"It's either Vergere or another creature like her," Jaina said. "And if she touched you through the Force, we can assume she was more than the assassin's pet familiar."
Ganner nodded. "She was there to point us out to the killer."
"I'm not so sure," Jason said. "If she was part of the plot, why did she save Mara's life? Why hasn't she sounded the alarm about us yet?"
Their discussion was interrupted by the arrival of Anakin and the rest of the strike team. The two Dark Jedi, Lomi and Welk, were with them, now clothed in their own dark armor and swaddled in Tekle's Bacta bandages. Jason was ashamed to find himself wishing the group had known the pair's identity before his brother decided to rescue them. He felt certain they would still have made the attempt, but after killing the Voxen Queen.
Over the course of several dozen attempts to reach the cloning facility, the Jedi had crossed replications of nearly every environment where Voxen might be sent to hunt them. Replications of agritracts, robofactories, and swamp farms. Now they were pushing through the slave city itself. In addition to a dozen different species of slave residents, the artificial city contained turbo lifts, slidewalks, even droid-operated hover cars. I don't like coming through here. Anakin eyed the growing number of slave residents. We're endangering them with our presence. They are already in danger, Lomi said. And you are the one who wishes to try the Voxen Warren. This is the only way to reach it. Lomi started down a cramped alley canyon that would not have felt out of place in Coruscant's underlevels. Barely 3 meters wide, the lane descended at a steep angle beneath a network of balconies and catwalks, then vanished into the dank-smelling murk ahead. The general haze of Yuuzhan Vong's presence suddenly grew strong and almost distinct. Anakin turned to scan the crowd and found a group of humans shoving toward Jason. All five were large men with swarthy faces and blank expressions, men so similar they could have been clones. Four reached for their belts. The fifth tossed a thumb-sized capsule at Jason's feet, and a thin coat of greenish gel spread across the street. Blorash jelly! Anakin burned a blaster hole through the jelly thrower's throat, then used the force to pluck his brother off the ground. Watch the crowd! A dozen lightsabers came to life and formed a dancing cage of light around the rear half of the strike team. Anakin put Jason down in the alley mouth. Someone took a heavy blow and struggled to stay conscious. Jaina! Jason yelled. The imposters flung more Blorash jelly, capturing slaves and Jedi alike, turning the streets into a tangle of confusion. Anakin felt just one thing clearly, the black gauze threatening to engulf his sister. He found Jaina pinned against a building, a blob of Blorash jelly binding her along one side, blood pouring from a head wound. Despite it all, she was holding two Yuuzhan Vong imposters at bay with a one-handed lightsaber defense. Lobaka and Zek were fighting toward her through a half-dozen still-masked warriors. Halima Rar crouched behind a crashed hover car, using Jovan Drark's long blaster to delay a company of reinforcements. Zek's opponents broke off, stepping back to hurl their ampostaffs like spears. Anakin batted one aside, then felt a hot pain in his abdomen when the second pierced his jumpsuit's armored lining. As he finished his tumble, the shaft swung away, the head pivoting inside his abdomen. He heard himself scream, then he was coming down, landing on his feet and hammering the butt into the ground. Cold anguish filled his belly. His knees tried to buckle, but he would not let them. Could not let them. Anakin! Guided by her screaming voice, Anakin flung a handful of arsen salts in Jaina's direction, used the force to carry them to the jelly. Then he grabbed the amphistaff and jerked it from his body. The agony was crushing. Anakin shunted it aside, used his Jedi training to prevent his suffering from crippling him. He was injured, but not mortally so. One of Jaina's attackers spun to attack, changing his amphistaff to whip form in mid-swing. Anakin batted the fanged head aside, leapt forward, feigned a slash. The imposter tried to step inside, but Anakin slipped a foot behind his foe's heel and swept the leg. The Yuuzhan Vong went down, rolled, then opened his own throat on Anakin's downturned lightsaber. Now free of her Blorash jelly, Jaina was driving her foe back with a wild web of lightsaber slashes. Calling on the Force for strength, Anakin stepped over and slashed his blade across the Yuuzhan Vong's knees. Jaina opened the warrior's chest plate before he hit the ground, then turned and grabbed Anakin by the elbow. By the Sith, Anakin! Why'd you do something like that? Like what? He asked. Jaina glared. They both knew his rescue had been rash. You were in trouble. And now you are. As they turned, Anakin found himself looking at a wall of Jedi, with Lobaka and Zek flanked by Jason, Ganner, and everyone else he had ordered to stay in the alley. The last of the Yuuzhan Vong imposters lay on the ground behind them, their maskers and Vonduan crab armor hacked into smoking pieces. Zek went instantly to Jaina's side. Tahiri beat Lobaka and Jason to Anakin's. She tried to pull his hand away from the wound, but he wouldn't allow it. He lifted his chin toward Halima, who was still crouched behind the hover car, burning holes in Yuuzhan Vong chests. Call her off, he said. Let's go before someone else gets killed. Paying no attention, Tahiri continued to tug at his arm. Anakin, how bad is it? Let me... Tahiri, stop! Anakin pushed her arm down. It's just a little cut. Eventually, the team stopped at an intersection that had been blocked with a Yorick coral plug. Anakin gestured at the barricade. Who wants the honors? Obaka and Tizar ignited their lightsabers simultaneously and set to work. The Yorick coral was much harder than that aboard the Exquisite Death, and it required nearly 20 minutes to cut through the meter-deep plug. Anakin spent much of the time in meditation, doing what he could for his injury. Finally, Ganner levitated the last block out of the intersection. Ahead of them, a large access tunnel ascended toward the surface at a shallow angle. About 50 meters distant, it ended in a transparent wall of membrane and an airlocked valveway that opened into one of the deep-walled service routes they had seen from space. This travelway, however, was obviously no longer in use. It was crammed with captured equipment. Land speeders, utility lifts, hover taxis, even a Sorosub cloud car. All of it no doubt being stored out of sight until it was needed in the training course. And there, sitting cockeyed in the middle of the tangle, with hatches sealed tight and one landing gear only half extended, was a battered light freighter. Well, Anakin said, it looks like the Force is finally with us.
Good news. Master Lobaka wishes to report that the Tachyon Flyer will be ready for launch before you attack the Queen.
Horrified that MTD's sharp voice would carry down the dusty slopes to the Grashal's protective thorn hedge, Anakin and several others fumbled for their hanging earpieces. They were studying the cloning lab from more than 100 meters distant, but the air in this part of the world ship was so still that even soft sounds carried.
He's reinserting the reactor cores now,
MTD said.
We're going home, Master Anakin. You're going to survive after all.
Affirmative. Anakin's voice was barely a whisper. Earlier, Jason had felt a single Voxen presence inside the huge Grashal, so it seemed likely they had at last reached the Queen. Now, all they had to do was kill her before the Yuuzhan Vong realized they were here. The cone-shaped Grashal stood in the heart of what had once been a vaulted dome. As the strike team had seen from the other side of the spaceport, the peak of the huge structure protruded through the outer shell of the world ship and, judging by the number of patching membranes, provided some much-needed support for the makeshift ceiling. Anakin had almost finished explaining his plan when a blue glow shone down through the transparent ceiling patches. He lifted his gaze and saw the Tachyon Flyer shooting into the green sky, its efflux nacelles glowing brilliantly as the ion drives flared to life. Loey? He gasped. Jaina and the others were instantly on their comlinks, trying to raise Lobaka and find out why he was leaving. They received only static in return.
Strange, Tizar Sebatine rasped. This one has always heard that nothing is more loyal than a Wookiee.
That's right, Jason said. And Lobaka is more loyal than most. Something's wrong.
Fact, Tenel Ka said.
The strike team stared at each other blankly while Anakin tried to raise Lobaka again. When that did not work, Jaina switched channels and sent an activation signal to MTD. MTD, what's Loey doing? Jason asked. Why is he leaving?
Leaving? Why, Master Lobaka is doing nothing of the sort. He's right here with...
The droid let the sentence drift off, then screeched,
Help! They're stealing me!
Who? Anakin asked.
Who?
MTD echoed.
Lomi and...
The explanation ended in a crackle of static. Welk, Zek finished, his voice hard and angry. Lomi and Welk. Ganner might not have been the first to realize what the ship's theft meant for Anakin, but as usual, he was the only one bold enough to say it. Anakin, I'm sorry. Once we found out they were dark Jedi, we should never have...
Yes, we should have,
Anakin said. He was surprised to discover how calm he felt. How focused he was on the duty at hand. Without them, we wouldn't have made it this far. Though Tekli was working on him, reaching into his wound with the Force to repair his torn organs, he could feel his strength fading and his pain rising.
Let's concentrate on the mission. Spurred into action, the strike team readied their weapons. Anakin knelt a few meters from the passage mouth and took aim at one of the dark shapes visible through the thorn hedge. When he felt the others also find their targets, two to each guard, he fired. Eight streaks of color fanned down the dusty slope and tore through the hedge into the four dark shapes beyond. None of the bolts missed. No Jedi would bungle such an important attack, not with the Force to guide his aim. But only two shots burned through. Six ricocheted off the guard's Vonduan crab armor, blasting dust columns into the air or burning pits into the Grashal wall. The surviving guards dropped and crawled for cover. Half the strike team was already rushing down the slope, firing as they ran, their T-21 repeating blasters keeping the Yuuzhan Vong pinned and clearing the hedge for the more powerful weapons behind. By the time Anakin and his three companions penetrated the hedge, the first wave had already cut through the Grashal wall. Tenel Ka, Zek, and Alima pressed themselves against the block and rode along as Ganner used the Force to shove the monolith inside. "Clear!" Zek yelled. Anakin leapt Tahiri and Tekli at the breach with Alima's long blaster and followed Jaina into the Grashal. It was like stepping into a Yavin 4 night storm. A dark fog hanging overhead, glow lichen up there somewhere casting sallow halos, blaster bolts and lightsabers flashing like colored lightning, and the humid air muffling the scream and roar of combat, making all that death seem more distant than it was. Anakin spun out from behind the door block and batted a razor bug from the air, found himself staring through a jungle of pulsing white vines, their corkscrew stalks rising out of planting bins filled with briny-smelling mud. The Yuuzhan Vong were ahead everywhere, their presence too dispersed and indistinct to tell him much. A pair of thud bugs sent him diving for cover. He exchanged his lightsaber for the power blaster and came up firing. The first shots left him so light-dazzled, he glimpsed only a dark shape on the opposite side of the bin, diving for cover. He spun around the end of the box, heard the snap hiss of an igniting lightsaber, then Tizar Sebatine's familiar hissing. The Yuuzhan Vong had thrown his last bug. Behind Anakin, the long blaster boomed. He felt panic from Tahiri and turned to find her rushing into the Grashal. A ball of fire followed her through the breach, and Tahiri went flying. Anakin rushed to help, but she was up before he took two steps. "Magma spitters! We're cut off!" Anakin did not bother to look. "Tekli?" Tahiri pointed behind him, where the Chadra fan was sprinkling stink salts on Tizar's forked tongue. The Barabel was smiling, but not waking. "Take him, and go." Every word filled Anakin's belly with fire. He pointed toward the others. "You may need to cut a way out." "You," Tahiri said. "I'm not going. Do it," Anakin snapped. When Tahiri's face fell, he spoke more gently. "You need to help Tekli. I'll be along." "Yes, Tahiri," Tekli said. She cast a knowing glance at Anakin, then knelt astride the Barabel and began to slap him. "Tizar is not responding. I cannot move him and work on him both." Tahiri looked doubtful, but could hardly refuse to help. Blinking back a tear, she stretched up to kiss Anakin on the lips, then caught herself and shook her head. "No, for that, you have to come back." Anakin gave her his best lopsided smile. "Soon, then. Soon," Tahiri repeated. "May the Force be with you." He set off at a painfully slow run. Twice, he dropped to a knee when his legs buckled. He had to beat the enemy assault force to the door. At last, he cleared the planting bins and spied the door membrane 20 meters to his left, as wide as an X-wing was long and twice as high. The far corner of the membrane rose slightly. Anakin ducked back into the planting beds, free hand already pulling a thermal detonator from his harness. When Anakin saw the figure who stepped through, he nearly dropped the detonator. The newcomer's back was turned, but he wore a tattered jumpsuit and stood a head taller than most humans. He set off for the Voxen pen at a sprint.
"Lowy?"
Anakin called, using the Force to make his weak voice carry. He reached out, but felt only the same hazy Yuuzhan Vong presence as before. The newcomer turned, revealing the profile of a sandy-haired human,
and raised an old E-11 blaster rifle. Anakin was already behind a planting bin, activating his comlink. "Imposter," he warned, "trying for the pens." The blaster fire crescendoed to a deafening roar, as did the Jedi frustration. The firing angles were impossible. A grenade detonated somewhere, and Jaina yelled for a charge. The door membrane began to roll upward, revealing 40 pairs of Yuuzhan Vong feet waiting to rush inside. Anakin opened himself to the Force completely, drawing it into himself through the power of his emotions. Not through his anger or fear like a dark Jedi, but through his love for his family and his fellow Jedi Knights, through his faith in the Jedi purpose and the promise of the future. The Force poured in from all sides, filling him with a swirling maelstrom of power and purpose, saturating him and devouring him. There was nothing to be frightened of, no reason to grieve. He could feel it flowing into him and himself flowing into it. Anakin was the Force, and the Force was Anakin. Firing as he ran, Anakin raced along the rising door. Every bolt blasted a Yuuzhan Vong foot. Muffled roars reverberated through the membrane. Ahead of him, half a dozen warriors dropped and rolled into the grashall. He blasted these before they could rise, then reached the other end and stroked the tickle pad. The door lowered again.
"Hot breath,"
Jaina cursed over the comlink.
"She's escaping."
Anakin could feel it too. The Voxen was moving down and away. He activated his own comlink. The imposter must have opened an escape tunnel. It no longer hurt to speak, but his aura had gone from faint to bright. His cells were burning like fire. "Jason, you're in charge. Take everyone and go after her." Jaina's surprise at not having her own name called carried through the Force like a shout across water, but she stifled any resentment she felt. Anakin slashed the membrane tickle pad and circled toward the empty Voxen pen. He could feel the Yuuzhan Vong ahead, crouching behind the last row of planting bins, secure in the knowledge that help was coming. That changed a moment later when Anakin began to pour blaster fire into their flank. His angle was poor for headshots and his bolts too weak to penetrate Bonduan crab armor. By the time the Yuuzhan Vong realized that, they were being overrun by Jedi. A plasma ball roared through the Grashall door. The sphere of white fire blossomed in front of him, seemingly from nowhere. Anakin dived and rolled into the wall, hit boots first, sprang into a backflip, returned to his feet 10 meters from the explosion.
"Anakin!"
Jaina's cry resembled a scream.
"Go!"
he commanded her through the Force. "She's getting away!" The blaster sang out in Anakin's hand, dropping Yuuzhan Vong as fast as it could fire. And still they came, piercing Anakin in 3 places, one amphistaff sinking its fangs into his flesh. The Force scalded the poison from his system before he felt it, and the new wounds troubled him less than the old one. But there were 12 more warriors behind them, and he could not hold forever. He killed another, then another, took a crippling slash to his thigh, and gave ground. The Yuuzhan Vong rushed, trying to slip past to the right. The long blaster roared from the pen area, blowing a head-sized hole through one Yuuzhan Vong and a fist-sized hole through the one behind him. Anakin launched himself into a backflip and landed 5 meters away. His aura flickered wildly as his cells began to burn and burst. He hazarded a glance over his shoulder and saw Jaina peering over the pit wall, tears streaming down her cheeks, the long blaster propped against her shoulder. Jason was beside her, likewise weeping, trying to pull her away.
"Go,"
Anakin said through the Force.
"I can't hold."